Good morning, everyone. Nuclear terrorism, of course, the subject of Hollywood lore and movie plot lines. There are all kinds of myths and misconceptions about what nuclear terrorism actually could be. I mean, we're told sometimes by movie directors that nukes fit in little briefcases.
Right, that you can make. You know, that's one thing I remember hearing is that bathtub gin, yes. Bathtub bombs, no.
Although some would have us believe that you can make a dirty bomb in a shop class or a home ec class.
It's true.
We're going to dispel some of those rumors and take a look at the reality of nuclear terrorism as they seem to be doing down at the White House at an unprecedented international conference. We'll take a wide look at this problem and a narrow look at what one city is doing to respond. Joining us is WNYC reporter Bob Henley here in the studios of WNYC. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Also, Matthew Bunn returns, a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, author of the new report, Securing the Bomb in 2010. Good morning once again, Professor.
Good morning.
Let's listen to John Brennan for a moment once again. You heard him at the top of the hour. He's President Barack Obama's top counterterrorism advisor who had this warning yesterday.
We cannot wait any longer before we lock down these stockpiles because we don't want to have any type of materials that fall into the hands of terrorist groups because the results will be devastating.
Now, Matthew Bunn, explain to me what it means to lock down these stockpiles, because, I mean, it's my understanding that most of them are under lock and key somewhere, but what is this sort of additional notion of locking down for the purposes of this conference actually mean?
Well, they haven't agreed on a particular level of security that everyone is going to achieve. That's one of the things I'm recommending in my report, that there needs to be a baseline level of protection that is in place wherever there's highly enriched uranium or plutonium, the key materials you can use to make a nuclear bomb. But we're talking about a whole range of security measures, including fences, intrusion detectors, barriers, vaults, but also things to deal with the insider threat, which I think is actually often the more important possibility, the idea that an insider might squirrel stuff away and carry it out in a briefcase or what have you. And that includes material accounting, keeping track of all the material so you know if some of it goes missing, where in the process line that happened, who had access at that time, seals that will tell you whether a can that has nuclear material has been opened, maybe even seals that will set off an alarm the moment that happens. These are the kinds of measures that we're talking about.
And Bob Henley, a WNYC reporter, from the perspective of a city like New York, which has already been the victim of terrorism multiple times, is that enough? And does that address the issues that are really most important on the streets?
No, actually what you have here is the ubiquitous nature of radioactive material that may not have a military application that could be readapted in the form of a dirty bomb.
That's the difference between fissile materials that can be used in an actual nuclear fission or thermonuclear explosion versus just radioactive stuff.
It's also the application of it. You could use any of this mixed together with a conventional weapon, a conventional explosive rather, and have a dispersal problem where it wouldn't be so much loss of life or limb immediately, but the anxiety about what level of radiation is involved with the explosion. It's more of a weapon, if you will, of mass disruption as opposed to destruction.
Well, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said that she's more concerned about a dirty bomb than she is a conventional weapon. Is that what officials here in New York are most concerned about?
Well, I think they're concerned about it all, but as a practical matter, you wouldn't have to have as much economic support to pull off a dirty bomb. It's more ad hoc, if you will, than having some kind of national laboratory to put together an atomic weapon.
Well, how does that play out for someone like, say, Police Commissioner Ray Kelly here in New York?
Well, it means that you have to operate on a few levels. One is you have to have granular intelligence. That is that you have to have language skills and cultural nuance to be able to be present around the world wherever something like this might be hatched up. And even here in the United States, I mean, we have Timothy McVeigh and the legacy of the far right here. Then number two, you have to have some kind of interdiction and detection. There's a lot of controversy about how good our detection is. And then third, and perhaps most difficult, you have to contemplate that all this fails and it goes off. And that's a very difficult conversation.
Well, let's hold on to the actual going off scenario for just a moment. Matthew Bunn, Bob Henley has raised the issue of how you interdict and sort of disrupt the supply of these kinds of materials. Let's talk about the peculiar situation for informants, insiders that you referred to a moment ago. Are those people easy to identify or easy to turn? And we've had some success in the past.
Well, no, they're not at all easy to identify or easy to turn. But let me get back to this distinction between dirty bombs and nuclear bombs, because that's important. A nuclear bomb is what happened to the Japanese city of Hiroshima. It's a whole center of a major city going up in smoke and turning into a smoldering radioactive ruin. So that it's absolutely true that that would be harder to do than a dirty bomb. But if you think of risk as the probability times the consequences, I think the risk of a nuclear bomb is much higher because of the enormous history-changing consequences that it would have. And we know that Al-Qaeda is very focused on it. Unfortunately, it doesn't take a national laboratory. It doesn't take a Manhattan Project to make a nuclear bomb once you have your hands on the nuclear material. Making the nuclear material is the hard part. In fact, with highly enriched uranium, it's basically a matter of slamming two pieces together at high speed to get a mushroom cloud out of it. And that's why we really need to focus on locking down this nuclear material wherever it may be, everywhere in the world. We do need, then, multiple layers of defense, including the interdiction and the detection, and
right.
In particular, sting operations and incentives for people to inform, because most of the cases where we have succeeded in seizing this kind of material, it hasn't been because there's been a detector in place somewhere. It's been because somebody ratted on the other
right.
people involved in the conspiracy.
And one of the unique things about the nuclear terrorist market is that the information often becomes more valuable than the nuclear material once you know where the bomb actually is, which is a form of protection in a strange kind of ironic way. Matthew Bunn, professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, author of the new report, Securing the Bomb 2010. WNYC reporter Bob Henley, in the last few seconds, what should people in New York be most concerned about?
Well, I think what they have to be aware of is that they have to become more aware about what radiation is. One of the problems the government has is a kind of scientific illiteracy about radiation. We have background radiation all the time. Radon is the second greatest cause of death, premature death in terms of cancer.
Well, at the very least, it's going to involve a new level of vigilance by security officials in urban areas all over the country. WNYC reporter Bob Henley, thanks so much.
Thanks.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.